And the Oscar goes to Parasite.
Cheers. Hello and welcome to Step and Repeat, to our season finale.
Season finale. Yes,
where we just finished the Oscars.
Just finished watching the 92nd Academy Awards.
Well, that happened.
That happened.
So we're sitting here sipping on some champagne, celebrating our not only our finale, but a huge night for the Oscars. History.
History-making night for the Oscars. The first time in 92 years that a foreign language film has won Best Picture.
Yeah. Crazy.
Crazy. That's crazy, crazy. Yeah.
And not to mention director, well, I mean, second time a director won, but screenwriting, Parasite cleaned up.
Yeah, it won the most awards of the evening, four. Mm-hmm. And so Bong Joon-ho, who's the director, took home all four of the awards because it was for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, and Best International Feature.
Yeah.
So he won four.
He just got to the point where I'm so sick of winning.
Do you know who the last person to win four Oscars in one night was?
Oh, I do not know. I don't know off the top of my head.
Walt Disney.
Wow. Yeah.
He is in the company of Walt Disney.
Yeah.
So
hopefully Walt Disney doesn't buy him one day.
Yeah. Very possible. So Parasite just did it. It broke that glass ceiling.
Yeah, and like, I just can't remember the last time a movie that actually deserved this award won this award.
Yeah.
12 Years a Slave, maybe. But
this is the first time in my adult life that my favorite movie of the year also won Best Picture. They never lied up. They never, ever lied up.
Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you. I know I kind of do feel a little bit bad because I know you were like really high on 1917 at the end. Yeah.
But the better man won. So
it's not like there are more metrics than Best Picture
to
the quality of a film.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but anyway, I'm really happy with Parasite, and I think Bong Joon-ho, and I loved how he accepted his awards. I love that he wasn't like smug about it, and he seemed genuinely happy and surprised to be there, and I was very happy to see him for all four of his wins. I was very happy to see him win, and his reaction overall to not only winning like best, like he knew he was going to win Best International Feature, but he like was still so like humble about it. But like he seemed so shocked and surprised when he won Best Director, and his reaction to it was just amazing. And I think like the winning Best Picture, like as much as I wanted 1917 to win, like it almost drew me to tears.
I was crying at the end.
Yeah, you were doing more than just crying.
I had so many emotions. I get so hyper at the Oscars. I like jumped as high as the ceiling when it won pretty much every single award.
Yeah, I've never seen you jump so high.
Right? Yeah. I become 5 years old again. I've gotten so many emotional feelings towards the Oscars. I remember back in the 2005 Oscars when Crash beat when Crash beat Brokeback Mountain, I remember I threw the remote at the television, almost broke the TV, turned off the TV, and stormed off to my bedroom and could not even watch it. Like, could not even watch the acceptance speech. That's how bad I was. And I have calmed down a little really? Since then. The worst now is like when like Green Book wins, I just go like, ugh. And then that's the worst I'll get.
Yeah. Yeah. There were some speeches tonight where I just like kind of turned away and I just didn't care. Like Joaquin Phoenix, I'm sure he gave a great speech, but like, I don't really care.
So here's the interesting.
Actually, that was pretty weird. To be honest.
Here's the interesting thing. I'm trying to use that word less. Interesting. Like, what does that mean? But the peculiar thing about...
Now we're just using synonyms.
Yeah. about the four best acting Oscars, which, just to recap, for best actor, it was Joaquin Phoenix for Joker, best actress Renee Zellweger for Judy, best supporting actor Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and best supporting actress Laura Dern for Marriage Story. We predicted all four. If you listened to our previous episode, you would have known that this was not a surprise whatsoever.
No, not at all.
And because they had won all these other previous awards too. And if to call back to some of our other previous episodes, wouldn't be a season finale if we didn't call back. I've mentioned things on the show before about narratives and how to win an Oscar. And you need to have a sort of common theme in your acceptance speeches, in the precursor awards that you win up until the Oscars. So you can get a sense of what they will say in the grand finale. And all four of the speeches tonight from the acting winners fit into the narrative that they've been playing up the entire award season. So for Brad Pitt, those were self-deprecating jokes. He's been very funny. And kind of creating this joke, these jokes around him, and it adds into the persona that he's this cool Hollywood guy. For Laura Dern, it's somebody who has been in the industry a long time. I mean, her parents were in
family,
the industry. Comes from Hollywood royalty, essentially, and whose turn it is for having a kind of, not quite comeback, but like, given the respect that she's earned.
You like me, you really like me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And for I almost said Judy Garland. for Renee Zellweger, that one was the easiest one. This is kind of the stereotypical Oscar one. Somebody who has been away for a few years. She hasn't made a movie for 6 years. And people kind of made fun of her for a little while. She comes back onto the scene.
Bridget Jones was 6 years ago?
I mean, The Edge of Reason or whatever the third one was. Yeah, she hasn't made a movie in 6 years until Judy. And so she kind of like comes back onto the scene and then reminds people of, you know, what they liked her for to begin with. And so she, you know, gives off this like, oh, shucks me sort of persona, and thank you. Like, this is really great. That's a narrative. And then all of this is to come back to Joaquin Phoenix, who has had the narrative, once he became the front runner, he had the narrative of we need to do better in the world type of thing. And I've mixed feelings on this because in theory or in practice, I don't disagree that, you know, there's injustice in the world. But in his speech tonight, he basically lists off every single injustice there possibly is known to man. And again, to call back to our Joker episode, this was my criticism of Joker, the movie, is that it doesn't really pick enough focus on one topic.
It doesn't pick a lane.
And yes, these are all of the things that he listed that, you know, are kind of be wrong with the society, you know, whether it be he said specifically, you know, bigotry against people depending on the color of their skin, their race, sexual orientation. He even brought in animal rights, which he's a vegan, so, and he did that in his Golden Globe speech. But it's kind of like, wow, these are a lot of different injustices, and I get intersectionality.
It's overwhelming.
And so it's, there's not necessarily one, I can't like focus on one. It's kind of like, yeah, the world is shit. I get that.
Yeah.
And
but, like, can we like offer a solution to maybe one? And it's just like, there was no clear path he was taking. It's just like, everything is just,
I thought his BAFTA speech was a little bit better because the BAFTA one was specifically about race. And even his Golden Globe speech, which I did derail because I thought it derailed. It went off the rails too much, but it had the common theme, at least, of veganism there.
Yeah.
And this one had a lot. All of us, like, I mean, I kind of, at the end of the day, you know, no harm, no foul. But I did think his call out to River Phoenix was really sweet.
That was very sweet, yes. That, and I know you said, like, he doesn't talk about his brother at
all. He never talks about his brother.
So I thought that was really sweet. I just, the part about drinking cow's milk just...
Yeah, that was very vivid.
Very weird, and I didn't get that. But,
that was, like, the veganism.
Yeah, no, I got that. But, like... I don't know. I don't think you should really be calling people out for drinking milk. Like that gets a little into the, I feel like the judgy zone, but I don't know. But, yeah, overall,
I'm not going to remember tonight for the acting wins.
Yeah, no, not at all. No, you're going to remember this year's Oscars for the, international impact it had.
Yeah.
Or Parasite overall.
And I think that speaks kind of more volumes into the way that film represents today, right? Mm-hmm. So in an ideal world, which I would say Parasite should win Best Picture, in an ideal world, a movie reflects the times. Best Picture winner reflects the times.
That's what we call the zeitgeist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think Parasite was that movie. Mm-hmm. Parasite was the movie to reflect the times. And not only that, but it's an international feature, and by international I mean not from the US. Mm-hmm. And in a time in society where we see a lot of tribalism and people backing into their own corners and the rise of nationalism, it's really, really cool to see us rewarding quote unquote outsiders for something that's supposed to be a local award show to give it to somebody from a whole other country is refreshing and hopeful, honestly, for the future.
Which kind of like that therein lie for me the difference between Bong Joon-ho's speeches and Joaquin Phoenix's speeches is Joaquin Phoenix is saying like, oh, this, you know, there's everything terrible going on in the world, like this, and then Bong Joon-ho had kind of a sense of hope about him, a sense of hope about the future, a sense of like, there is good in this world, and you just have to look to find it. And I like that's what I appreciated about him, and the fact that he was so humble and so grateful for what he had won, and he really is a hard working person in Hollywood, well, not in Hollywood, but in South Korea. And the fact that we're honoring him tonight and for this recognition is just speaks volumes.
And Hollywood too. I mean, so like, it's easy with Parasite, especially, to kind of pigeonhole Bong Joon-ho as into this indie art house person. But let's not forget that Bong Joon-ho's last movie was a Netflix feature. Yeah. So he's also industry too, which is great. This is why it's perfect, because it's like a great sort of meeting of the minds of him being both part of the Netflix machine and the indies, the indie cred.
Yeah.
So he was the perfect, like the perfect person to kind of award Best Director. I was more excited for him for Best Director, I think.
Yeah.
Because another reason too is it's great to give a director the award for Best Director when they're in their prime. Mm-hmm. It is so frequent that you wait to give the director, and frankly the actors too, for awards that they should have won 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And when they wait too long, they kind of end up regretting it. So you look at somebody like nominees this year, Quentin Tarantino, where they wonder if they should have given it to him for Pulp Fiction in 1994, or for Martin Scorsese, should they have given it to him for Goodfellas in 1992? But they didn't. And they had to wait. So, and now for Bong Joon-ho, they give it to him, somebody who's in his prime and already made a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Give it to them for that. So I love saying that.
Yeah. That's a great point. Just wish we would have a little more, hopefully a little more diversity in the future. Maybe this is kind of like leading to that. Maybe kind of like a jab back at the Oscars. Like, hey, like, look, people of color, people who aren't from this country, can win. They do make good material. Maybe it's time to start looking at that And like, I know that the Oscars are trying to become more diverse, but this is really, I feel like a step in the right direction. It's a small step, but it's a step that needed to be taken.
So, I mean, things weren't great, especially compared to the nominees, which were overwhelmingly white. But obviously the four Parasite wins were great for people of color too. But Taika Waititi won for best original, or I'm sorry, best adapted screenplay. So, so was it, you know, completely a whiteout in all the sort of main winners too. And we had like some other kind of like cool, almost historic wins. So, Hildur, I can never pronounce her last name. Guttenberg, the composer for Joker, won too. She's only the third woman to win for best original score. Mm-hmm. And she's just so charming when she's giving her speeches, and she can tell she feels greatly honored for this too. And she is now a Tony away from an EGOT, because she won an Emmy, a Grammy, and now an Oscar. She won her Emmy for the score for Chernobyl, and that may be of what she did for won her Grammy for too. But regardless, so.
But another thing we've talked about on the podcast, you're more likely to win an EGOT for
music. Music. Which is why Cynthia Erivo came this close to winning an EGOT too, because she was nominated for Best Original Song.
Yeah. Well, we all know my thoughts on
that. Was a weak category this year.
It was a very weak category.
That was probably the category I cared about the least.
All right, so should we bring up our contractual obligation?
How stacked Best Actor? I mean, I did think Joaquin Phoenix was good in Joker, and he wasn't my choice, but Adam Driver was right there. And I was even watching those clips that they were showing, and I was just like, Adam Driver.
Yeah.
And we're gonna just, he's right there, we're not gonna give it to him.
Yeah, he was Twitter bullied, and
I know, didn't it's like it. I just can't believe that the four acting nominees went unchallenged pretty much the entire race. Well, that is unheard of.
My pick, Jonathan Pryce, like, he had no chance, but like, I thought he was the best of the four of them. So,
or five.
Five, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I they didn't even show his like best work in the movie. Like when they were showing the clips.
Yeah. I think because a lot of his best work in the movie is physical. It's not verbal, and they just needed to keep their attention.
Exactly. Yeah. But unfortunately, like, it's just, it really sucks that performances like his get like, I'm glad they get nominated, but like, they're just like so overlooked, because like, this is like no pun intended, but like, the villain's gonna win out this year. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously Heath Ledger won for playing
the same role
for in 2008, which means since 2008 there have been more people who have won for playing the character Joker than female best director Oscar winners. There's more people that won for Joker. Like, come on.
Let's do better, Oscars.
Yeah.
You should get this trending tomorrow. You need to get this trending tomorrow.
Yeah.
And also, so like, also I was thinking, like, I know we've brought this up in the past. I think the only other role to win best actor
for the same role by two
different people was Godfather.
Yeah, Corleone.
So, but I can't think of anything else.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head either.
Who's gonna win the next? Who's gonna be the person to win next for Joker? It's only a matter of time.
I know. Yeah.
So
can we just be done with?
Can we be done with the Joker? Yeah. We'll never be done with the Joker ever. Everyone is. That is a role that people are gonna try to top and top and top and top, and it's like, it'll just get to a point where it's just like, okay, this is too much.
At what cost?
Yeah. So.
But 1917 still did very well. I mean, well, well. I wouldn't say very well, but it did well.
It did well-ish.
It got three. So it got sound mixing, it got cinematography, obviously, and it got visual effects.
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised that it won visual effects.
I wasn't so surprised at visual effects because a lot of times they vote for just the technical one. So anyone can vote on these awards, right? And so they see 1917 on the ballot and they're like, oh, look, that's the technical movie. Like, check. Yeah. So that becomes harder when you have multiple Best Picture nominees that are also nominated. And so then,
yeah, but I just look at what's going up against, and I'm like, out of all those, I would not pick 1917 to be the winner for visual effects. But
and also, call back to our previous episode where I made fun of the CGI on the rat. your best visual effects Oscar winner, folks.
Yeah, that's karma for you.
Yeah. That is the only CGI I don't like. Yeah. Everything else was fine.
Yeah. Editing. Why did Ford v Ferrari win?
Yeah. It also won sound editing, remember, mm-hmm. too. So yeah. Ford v Ferrari did very well. Yeah. If you would have told me a month ago that Ford versus Ferrari has two more Oscars than The Irishman, I would have thought you were crazy.
Yeah.
Did very well. I mean, for expectations were low, but it won two. Yeah, I mean, it won the editing awards for the same reason. Like, it's cars being in a car, like, zip to the person on the car, zip to the person watching the car, then inside the car, outside the car, on the raceway.
Yeah.
And
when I think of Ford versus Ferrari, like the big thing I think of is, like, the race is Le Mans.
Le Mans.
And like, them, like, going around the track. So, like, obviously, the sound editing is a huge part of that, so...
Yeah, that's why in my predictions at the very last minute, I switched Ford v Ferrari to win editing too, because it was nominated in regular editing. And I was like, okay, I think there's going to be some overlap there. And they, and like how they got the, like the sounds of the cars are like pretty cool. So they like stuck microphones essentially like inside the engines of cars to get authentic sounds. Yeah. And it's pretty cool. And so I'm very happy that they won sound editing actually.
Yeah.
Do you think, this is actually a good time to bring it up too. So there was a split this year in the sound awards. So, Ford versus Ferrari won sound editing and 1917 won sound mixing. Mm. And they are discussing possibly merging the sound editing and sound mixing awards.
Yeah,
they used to merge them a long time ago, and then they split them. And now, as the process of sound editing and sound mixing becomes more and more similar, and there's a lot of overlap, they're considering it just dwindling it down to best sound again.
Here's the thing: I would be totally cool with them combining them and keeping them in the ceremony if they wanted to split them and do them the night before in the technical awards ceremony. I think that would also be okay.
I think that's offensive. I think it's offensive to put it in to do it all like off stage. I think it's cool that we were like want to reward the sound, but I think it's fine. I think it's fine to put them together to say like best sound, mm-hmm. and then the sound editors and the sound mixers get the Oscars, but I would keep them during the ceremony. I wouldn't give it to them the night before. Yeah. That's the part that I think is offensive.
Well, yeah, I would just say that they come down to such technicalities that like I would keep sound in general as a category, but in the actual night of the Oscars, but I feel like if you wanted to specify sound mixing and sound editing, I feel like that should be a category. Those two separate categories should go together in the technical awards the night before. But I still think they should keep sound overall in this award show in the night of.
I'm not following what you're saying then.
No, so
I don't get the night before part.
So the night before the Oscars is always the technical.
No.
Isn't there
No, I mean, there's the Governor's Ball, which is, yeah. But that's held now, like, months before.
What am I thinking?
The Oscars. Okay.
What am I thinking of?
I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I think they should combine it.
I'm okay with them combining it. Mm-hmm. I think there's a few awards that they should consider handing out, new awards. Not best popular film.
No.
And this year is another year, 2 years in a row, that a lot of the best picture nominees were major box office successes. I think something at least 4, maybe 5 of the best picture nominees made over $100 million this year. Like, that has not happened in at least a decade.
Yeah. One thing I did like in Brad Pitt's speech is that he brought up the stunt coordinators. I thought that was great. And I think I've always thought that stunt coordination needed to be a category.
Stunts and casting are the two that need to be next.
Mm-hmm. I think both take extreme amounts of talent and extreme amounts of hard work. And, I mean, they both have their own associations. So, like, why not? Like, I don't understand why we have to leave them out. I understand that, like, the ceremony's already, like, too long, but there's stuff they did tonight that, like, kept it dragging out too long. Like, introducing the introducers, like...
I don't really know why they did that, too.
I didn't understand that. So,
Do we still know why Eminem was there?
I have no idea.
I was okay with it. I was, like, fine with him being there, but I still don't... Yeah. I don't get the reason.
Clearly you were okay. You were singing along.
I know, because I love Lose Yourself. I know all the words to Lose Yourself. It is my karaoke song.
But, like, I didn't get that.
And, like, it's not even the 20th anniversary of 8 Mile.
It's 18th. It's
18th. Yeah. It came out in 2002.
Yeah. So that was... I was like, are you there to, like, troll these people? Like...
I think it was just, like, there to have Eminem and kind of, like, be this surprise.
Yeah, and, like, Eminem wasn't the good part. The best part of Eminem being there was
watching the people's faces. Yeah, the audience, yeah.
It was priceless.
Oh, my God, there's got to be great GIFs online right now.
I need to...
This is the bad part about not recording an episode immediately after the Oscars airs. Yeah. Like, I haven't gone on Twitter and seen all the good stuff.
Yeah, so... all right, I don't know... We've really covered most of it, right? I mean, costume design, that was
Little Women. Little Women finally won.
That was a given.
Yeah, a Greta Gerwig movie finally has an Oscar.
Poor Greta. She was just sitting there, like,
I know,
cheering on everyone else in her movie except her.
Yeah, and so they need to do something with the best costumes. Because the best costumes are great. Like, every single time, every winner is great, but if you go back into the best costume winners, it goes to, like, the stereotypical one that you think of every time. It's always the period piece, usually something with, like, big dresses, which is, like, I think that's unfortunate too. I think it's unfortunate that Little Women were recognizing for the outfits. Like, I think there's something... borderline sexist about that.
See, yeah, that's offensive.
Yeah.
That's offensive, yeah.
It's like, okay, we, like, love your dresses, but the writing, not so much. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't feel right. It doesn't sit with me well. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I'm glad that Little Women has an Oscar. So I can't complain too much.
Yeah. And... as far as design goes, sorry, I'm switching subjects. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood winning production design, like, not a total shock, but I'm mad at it.
Yeah, that one, I mean, production design was so difficult to predict.
Yeah, any one of those could have won, but, like, I thought 1917, like, hands down had this. Like, I was just, like, blown away. Like, no pun intended, but I was blown away.
Yeah.
1917.
I agree. So, I mean, like, everything had to be so intricate in 1917 in order for them to pull that off in the production design.
I forget everything about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah. When I think about 1917, like, just the scenes of No Man's Land and, like, the scenes of them, like, walking through the trenches and, like the amount of work that had to go into that. I want to, like, punch someone. I was sorry.
No. I mean,
I mean, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because it was a Hollywood movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say. So it won for one word only, nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And so they recreated 1969 in a time where a lot of Oscar voters were still alive. And they see that and they, like, remember that. And they are, like, brought back to it. And they vote on it. So, yeah. I mean, it won for pure nostalgia.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't, I mean, it was fine. But I guess they had to give some love to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. I mean, there was, like, definitely that could have gone a number of ways. Yeah. Like, Parasite could have won that too. That's, like, another thing, like, somewhat similarly, I would have loved it if Parasite won best production design too, because it's a modern film too, and similar to the way that costume designs never reward modern films, like, production design should do the same thing. They almost always award period pieces the same way that costume design does. It's not as bad as costume, but
the
designs, they always reward period pieces.
And I never understood what was so special about the design, other than it being them recreating a Hollywood set, which they do every day. So that's my beef, but no love for Tarantino.
Well, he has his last film now too.
We'll
to
see.
finally impress us.
Is it going to be Star Trek? Is it going to be Kill Bill?
I hope it's not. I hope it's neither.
Yeah. Well,
it would be such an anticlimactic ending. Mm-hmm. If it's either Star Trek or Kill Bill.
Yeah. Maybe he'll go full circle and do, like, Pulp Fiction too. Yeah. Who knows? I don't know.
Not Toy Story 1. Toy Story 4 1.
Oh, yeah, Toy Story 4 1. Yeah. I love Toy Story 4.
Yeah.
That's
almost like a footnote on the night, actually. It's kind of like, wow, yeah, that also happened.
It is a footnote. I'm really happy Toy Story 4 1. Unfortunately, I did not put Toy Story 4 on my ballot.
But it's fun. I would rather be wrong on my ballot and.
Yeah. But also, like, going back to our discussion about Pixar kind of dominating the animated feature field, I'm kind of, like, torn on this since, like, we've talked about it. The other four movies, I like Missing Link. I didn't love Missing Link. I've never seen Klaus or I Lost My Body, but I know you said I Lost My Body was, like, really great.
I really
liked
it. Which is I Lost My Body is, like, the adult option of the five.
I
did not like Missing Link. I watched it. I ended up watching 50 out of 53 movies.
Did you watch How to Train Your Dragon?
No, but that was one of the ones I didn't see because I would have had to watch the first two, which I also haven't seen.
Yeah.
So
it's really like pulls in your heartstrings.
Yeah,
it's,
I think I would like
it's
it.
It's really cute. Yeah. And the only thing that hurt it for animated feature was that it came out in, like, January, February of 2019.
And it was a third. I mean, the same way that Toy Story 4 was vulnerable was in the same way that How to Train Your Dragon was never going to win because it was a third of
a
series.
Exactly. But, like, I think Toy Story 4, like, even if they, like, continue on with the series, if they do, like, a fifth one, Toy Story 4 will be, like, the forgotten Toy Story. Even though I thought it was great, it'll never top 3, 2, or 1. But I'm glad it got the recognition that it deserves. Because, honestly, I did think it was the best animated movie of the year. And I know, like, that's kind of, like, the unpopular opinion. Well, clearly not, because it won the Oscar. But I know a lot of people who do not like Toy Story 4 and, like, definitely think it should not have been made. Or, like, it doesn't even belong in the Toy Story realm. It's, like, its own thing. But I thought it was great. I have zero problems with Toy Story 4. So
I'm happy with it winning.
Yeah.
I did like I Lost My Body. I did not like Klaus. I didn't like Klaus and I didn't like Missing Link for the same reason. I thought both were anchored by amazing animation, and I think that's why they were nominated. But the storylines were just so weak, particularly in Missing Link. But Toy Story 4 actually had a good storyline.
Yeah. Well, the guys at Pixar also have a lot more to work with at Pixar. They're a much bigger studio than the studios.
I mean, but Missing Link was so paint by the numbers. Yeah. Like, a 5-year-old could have written that movie. Because it was made for 5-year-olds. Yeah. But the animation was so good. It was, like, really cool. Really cool. So I'm just like, I'm glad it wasn't Missing Link. Of the two, I Lost My Body at least is different than Klaus. I'm putting those two together because they're both Netflix movies. Mm. So, I Lost My Body was at least a little different in that sense.
Yeah. So, all right.
And we were wrong that the Obamas weren't there. American Factory won best documentary.
I thought like one of them would be there.
I thought, yeah, I was like, Michelle's going to be there.
Yeah,
like,
she's going to pop out.
Yeah. I don't even think they thanked them.
No, they didn't mention them at all.
Interesting.
They did not mention them at all.
They did thank them in their acceptance speech for the Indie Spirit Awards.
Yeah.
So I watched this.
I think they wanted to like keep them kind of out of it. Because I don't think they wanted to be like, oh, we won because the Obamas.
I know. Yeah. American Factory was the first movie that the Obamas produced under their production company, Higher Ground. So,
yeah, I look forward to more from Michelle.
Yeah, and they have documentaries in the pipeline.
Know who is running that production company?
No, it's kind of funny because I think they, Barack and Michelle did a Q&A with the directors of American Factory, and this is available on Netflix. But it's kind of clear that they are not filmmakers and that, they are talking like in broad terms. They're like, we just want to tell stories. We want to tell like the American people. And the directors of American Factory like clearly are filmmakers and like know what they're talking about. And it's like one of the very few times where I feel like I saw Barack and Michelle out of their element.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it was interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm happy. For American Factory. It was pretty good. Yeah, I think I would have been happy with almost any of the documentaries winning.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Well, I haven't seen any of them, so.
Yeah. You haven't seen any of them?
Mm-hmm. Oh. I have my excuses, but I'll save those for
off the pod. Yeah, well, also, documentaries can be hard to sit through sometimes, too. And I find it very hard to grade documentaries because it's like, what am I grading it on? Like, am I grading it on subject matter? Am I grading it on how good the film is? It's very difficult for me to talk about documentaries in the same way. Mm. It's different than a fictional film. Fictional films are easier to grade for me.
Yeah, yeah. Documentaries are like in their own,
Their
own world.
Because they're true. They're true stories.
Yeah, documentaries could have their own Oscars. And I'm pretty sure they do, and I'm glad we recognize them, but like their documentaries, like to me, like are like different stories and they're their own thing.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, there's a reason why we split fiction and nonfiction books.
Exactly,
because
exactly
they're so different.
Yeah. All right, so anything else in tonight's ceremony?
I'm not gonna get any sleep today. I'm so thrilled.
So I have kind of a one last Oscar revisionist history for the finale.
Well, we have to reveal our results of the poll that released too.
Yes.
Do you want to do yours first, or do you want to?
We can do mine first, and then we'll reveal.
Okay,
we'll do the big reveal.
Okay,
all right. So this could take a minute.
I have no idea what you're doing. I'm so excited.
I want to rank in order from the last decade best picture winners.
Oh, okay.
So 2010 to 2019.
Oh yeah, that's good.
The best picture winners ranked in order.
Yeah,
and I'm kind of putting you on the spot. I apologize.
Yeah. No. Wait, can?
Do you want a reminder?
No. Can I see if I can guess without looking?
Sure.
Okay. So 2010 would have been The King's Speech.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm definitely right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
2000. That was the 2009. 2010. Movies. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So, 2010, The King's Speech. Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay.
2010, The King's Speech. Yeah. 2011, The Artist. Mm-hmm. 2012 was That Argo?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 2013, 12 Years a Slave. Mm-hmm. 2014 would have been Birdman.
Correct.
2015 would have been Spotlight.
Correct.
2016 would have been Moonlight. Mm-hmm. 17, The Shape of Water. teen Green Book. We know it's going last. And 19 Parasite.
Good job. Got them all.
I try and think of this back and like, yeah. I constantly rehearse this kind of stuff in my head because I'm afraid I'm going to forget. I feel like I have a bad memory.
Or like someone's going to put you on the spot one day and be like, can you rank these?
Yeah. No, that's why I do it, because like, I'm trying to wean myself off of like going to Wikipedia for everything. So it's like, no, you know this, you know, do it.
Yeah. When we said 2010, I was thinking like the Hurt Locker, but Hurt Locker won in 2010. Yeah. Being 2009. So yeah, there's always that confusion. Yeah.
Like
so,
when the ceremony is. And I try to be firm of the movie year.
Yeah.
Not the ceremony year.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
So can you rank those right off the top of your head?
Yeah.
We all know what's last.
I know. And it's actually, it is a competition for last, but I will put Green Book last. Green Book 10, 9, The Artist, 8, this is just kind of off the top of my head, 8, let's go, I like don't really care for Argo, 8, Argo, 7, The Shape of Water, 6, The King's Speech, 5, Moonlight, 4, what am I missing? Okay, so we have Parasite, Spotlight, Moonlight, and 12 Years a Slave. 4, Moonlight, 3, Spotlight, 2, 12 Years a Slave, 1, Parasite.
So ours are very, very, very similar.
Yeah.
Except, so my 10 would be The Artist. My 9 would be Green Book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty interchangeable. They're both not memorable Best Picture winners.
Yeah. My 8 would probably be... probably Argo. My 8 would be Argo.
And you said, oh, wow, when I put 8 at Argo. No, I just like...
Because I didn't think we'd... I thought you liked it a lot more than I did.
Oh, no. I don't care for Argo that much.
No, that's why I was surprised. So,
yeah.
Argo. And
I feel like I should care because it's politics and movies, and it's like the two things that I love, but it just doesn't connect for me.
Yeah. 7, I would put The King's Speech. 6, I would put Birdman. 5, I would probably put Shape of Water.
Interesting. I thought you didn't really.
Oh, no. Let me switch. Yeah. I would put Shape of Water and then Birdman. And then I would put, I guess kind of the rest in order, the same you did. Moonlight, Spotlight, 12 Years a Slave, Parasite.
So Parasite is our best picture of the decade.
Yeah, hands down, I think Parasite was the best of the decade.
Would 1917 be the best of the decade for you too? If that one?
No. Yes. Yeah, I would put 1917 if it would have won.
I think you liked 2019 as a film year more than you
I did.
On.
You said
you didn't like it on a previous episode.
So I didn't like as many movies as I did previously. However, some of the best movies of the year that I liked all went into my top 50 of the decade.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So like it had, there was a lot at the top, but overall the average was lower.
I believe I put 12 Years a Slave in my top 50. But I think 1917 would have ranked higher than 12 Years a Slave.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why 1917 like resonated with me so much, but it just did, and I just thought it was like one of the most memorable movies of the year. So, I would have put 1917 as the best picture of, and maybe it's also because it's so recent and so fresh in my mind, and the other ones just aren't. And like it could be like I could be looking at it later retrospectively and like change it up again, but as of now, that is my order. So, sorry, that was just like
no. It's I like kind of like hearing this sort of rationale play out too. I actually really do think 2019 was strong. Like I think age will be kind to 2019.
Yeah, and I'm very curious to see how 2020 is going to play out.
Yeah,
because I do not see much, like, as of right now.
I do. I mean, you never know. You never know.
Yeah. So, we'll see. It's we got a long year ahead. So
yes.
And I did see two movies this year already.
So. Wow, good for you.
I've
been playing catch up on Oscars and the Indie Spirit Awards. I've watched so many movies in January. Mm-hmm. I probably watched a total of like 30 movies in January. Wow. Like, just to catch up on. I even watched the movie Breakthrough to see all the Oscar nominees.
You have a lot of patience.
That movie was categorically offensive, and I don't recommend it to a single soul on this earth. That would have been the worst movie of the year had I seen it in the film year 2019.
How about Chrissy Metz singing tonight?
Like, she's a fine singer, but like...
But I'm like, what are you doing there? It just seemed very...
That is a stain on her resume that she'll never be able to get off.
What, Breakthrough?
Breakthrough.
Yeah.
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 I'm worried about Topher Grace. I am worried about Topher Grace's financial state. He needs that paycheck that bad.
I don't think that was a paycheck movie at all. I think that was a movie to do it for the whatever message it had to send. I don't know. I haven't seen it, so.
No, that's why, because like these movies make bank. These are faith-based movies.
Yeah.
They make bank at the box office, which means they can, the more this like film studio makes money, the more they can afford for bigger and bigger actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
All right.
Which is sad. Sad state of affairs. Mm-hmm. You can make a good religious movie. Martin Scorsese did it with Silence.
Yeah. I mean, Passion of the Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't need to be a crappy movie.
Those are like the only two I can think of.
I know.
Just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
It's also 1:30 in the morning and I'm very tired. So.
Truly.
All right. So again, speaking of tired and going to bed, should we
reveal what you all picked for Best Picture? So as a reminder, we left you all with a link to a Google form where you would rank all the Best Picture nominees. And you, because it's preferential voting... similar to the Iowa caucus, this was done electronically, but our system did not crash.
Yeah. And we also have younger voters.
Yes. So, because
Pete Buttigieg did not win our ballot.
Yeah, no one is declaring victory. The Irishman is not declaring victory before it happens. You ranked all the 9 Best Picture nominees. And again, as a reminder, it's a preferential ballot system. So in order to win, the Best Picture needs at least 50% of the first place votes in a round to win. And so after one round, the film with the least amount of first place votes is eliminated. And then you move on to the second round, and then your votes are reallocated to match however many films are left. So if one film's eliminated and that was your number 4, then your previous number 5 becomes your number 4, and so on. And you do that until one picture has at least 50% of the votes. And it could come down to 2 and then win. So... was very happy with the amount of responses we got, actually.
Yeah, thank you.
So thank you all for voting. I know it can't be hard to vote for all 9, and I think it's okay, especially if you didn't even see them all, because we know that the Oscar voters did not watch all the nominees, so why should those standards be held to you too? So,
I did. Not yeah,
I exactly. I know. I watched 50 out of the 53 movies. How many do you think watched at least 50
you're
of those
not even
movies?
A voter.
Exactly.
I am. You're an indie spirit.
I am an indie spirit voter, and I am very happy that The Farewell won Best Picture there. But okay, so our Best Picture winners. We'll go round by round. So after the first round. 3 out of the 9 nominees, 3 were eliminated. They did not receive any first place votes.
Oh no.
And just for, you know, shits and giggles, we'll say what, like, the kind of rankings were, what, like, would have had the lowest average. Granted, this has no bearing on the films or not, but number 9, you picked Joker.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. And I stand by my sentiments on the podcast about Joker.
I was higher on Joker than you were, and I still am.
Go back and review. Yeah. I stand by what I said.
That is one of my favorite episodes, actually. Please go back and listen. And number 8 was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, bye.
I expected that to be higher, truthfully. Nope, I thought more people would pick that. I thought somebody would have picked that at number 1, but no one had that as number 1.
Good.
And
y'all are very intelligent.
Number 7, and these are the 3 that were eliminated in the first round, was Marriage Story. No. So none of them received first place votes.
I don't think y'all watched Marriage Story.
I don't think so either. Like,
I think that's why you ranked it so
well. Marriage Story peaked early, and then it just, like,
Marriage Story peaked before it came out.
Yeah.
And then people saw it, and then Twitter saw it, and then it fell off. Yeah.
Yeah. I it was my number 3 movie of the year, so I had to recommend it.
Up there for me.
Okay, so on to round 2, which means all of these had at least one first place vote. But the one with the least amount of first place votes and one that was eliminated at number 6, Little Women.
Yep, bye.
Even though I love it. Well, thank you to the people who voted for it at number 1. But you're gone. Yeah.
You're basic.
And so on to round 3.
Your movies are getting eliminated.
They are. I really liked most of these movies. So on to round 3, where we have 5 nominees left, but 2 of these movies were eliminated because they had the same amount of first place votes. And based on weighted averages, number 5 was The Irishman.
Oh, bye.
And number 4... was Ford versus Ferrari.
Oh, well, 4 is good.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised that it was that high. But clearly the Academy loved it too.
Well, remember who's voting too. Ford versus Ferrari.
People actually saw that movie. Yeah.
And it's also like people who are our age love that movie. Like, and like more so than the older Oscar voters.
Yeah.
There's a trend here.
So that leads us to our top 3, and these were by far the ones that had the most number ones, and it was a very close race from here on out. But our top 3 were Jojo Rabbit, 1917, and Parasite. And the one in round 4 with the least amount of votes, or the least amount of number 1 votes, was Jojo Rabbit.
Oh.
So number 3. And so then it came down to... and 1917 versus Parasite.
I hope we didn't have any influence on these votes.
I know. I hope so too. And every time I tried to say, I was like, "You are picking the winner." I didn't want to say
not us.
It's not like what you think should win.
Yeah.
So I really hope you took that to heart, because if so, that means you agree with us.
Yeah.
And because we both individually picked those winners as they should win too.
Mm-hmm.
So it came down to 1917 and Parasite, and the Oscar for Best Picture, as chosen by Step and Repeat listeners, goes to both.
What?
It was a tie. It was a tie between 1917 and Parasite.
It's Step and Repeat history. This is going to go down in history.
The first ever tie. For Best Picture. There were an even number of votes.
Oh, wait. This is the first time we've done this.
I know. Hopefully not the last. Join us on season 2. we had an even number of votes. And in the rounds leading up to it, none of them had over 50% of the first place votes. So it came down to the very end and came down to the very last vote. Of picking 1917 versus Parasite, and
that's crazy.
It ended up being the same. And the interesting part is, I don't know if this has no bearing whatsoever, But the way that the preferential system goes, when Jojo Rabbit was in the top three, the 1917 had the most straight number of votes. But then when Jojo Rabbit was eliminated, more of those votes went to Parasite than went to 1917. So then that like led it up to the tie. Yeah. So this is how the preferential ballot can really change things. Because then otherwise, yeah, 1917 would have won.
So unlike in November, your vote matters here.
Exactly. And there will be a tie in November. Could you imagine?
No, I don't even want to imagine that world.
Oh my gosh. So, just like the regular Oscar voters, you had a hard time picking between 1917 and Parasite.
I mean, it just goes to show that they're just two fantastic movies, and one of them had to win out. So,
I am very happy. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, this tells you everything you need to know. I think alarm sound is telling us we need to
wrap it up.
We
need to wrap up our season. So, that being said, we have the rest of February coming up. Not quite sure. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll start season two of Step and Repeat. But please send us your ideas, what you want us to talk about. Send us your questions, comments, concerns. We'll take even threats, bribes, promises. We'll take all of it. So email us at stepandrepeatpod@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook. Just search Step and Repeat Podcast, or on Twitter at @RepeatStepPod. We want to hear from you. We want to hear what you think is going to be the big Oscar winners for 2020. We just want to hear from you. We want to hear from our listeners. We love hearing from our listeners. And we do get a fair amount of listener emails and questions. So, yeah.
We'll read your questions on the air. And honest feedback is welcome. Like, what did we do well in season one? And what can we do better in season two?
Yeah, let us know. And we look forward to covering a full year of movies coming
this time,
up.
Yeah.
This time around. So.
And at least want to end things on thanking you for listening. I know sometimes, you know, talking an hour or so about movies can... an hour plus can be a lot. And it shows just how much you're willing to be with us, and we appreciate you.
And we always want to have guests on. So if you want to come talk with us about movies, we are glad to have you.
Yeah,
so.
I want more guests, special episodes, roundtables, etc.
I can only talk to Andrew for so long before I want to just give him a big old hug.
I was like, where are you going with this?
So cheers to a successful first
season.
And happy Oscar Day.
Thank you, Matt.
And thank you. And we'll talk to you soon.
In 2020.
Good night.
Good night.